Good afternoon. Oh, it's still morning. Good morning, everyone. I want it to be afternoon already. So my portion of today's presentation, I'm going to talk about literature findings and lessons from non-horticultural uses of eye tracking. And the idea for this came about at Purdue University. We have a Discovery Learning Research Center. And most recently, there have been engineering faculty and some technology faculty that have also done some eye tracking work. And so when I went to the symposium, it was interesting to see that some of the things that we were doing as a group, looking at some of the eye tracking work, there were similar things going on. And I'll talk about that in just a second. So Dr. Behe talked about current studies in horticulture. And just to back up for a second, I want to talk about, what is the process of eye tracking? Well, what we're looking at here is measuring either the point of gaze where someone is looking. So as I look out at all of you, all you can see is me maybe making eye contact with you. But in some cases, I may be looking at your lanyard. I may be looking at your glasses. And so as you saw with the dots and the heat maps that Dr. Behe showed, that people are looking at different items, although when I look at you person to person, all I can tell is that you're looking in my direction, correct? So what we're looking at is the process of measuring either the point of gaze where one is looking or the motion of an eye or your particular eye. And eye trackers, as Dr. Behe talked about, are used in numerous disciplines via research or visual systems, some of those being psychology, some of them being cognitive linguistics, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. And then, of course, marketing and product design. So what you see over here to the left is, I'm going to talk a little bit about the history of eye tracking. And this is very important because this sort of framed what was going on where we are today. In 1879, Louis Javal observed that reading does not involve a smooth sweeping motion. And so what you see over here is actually the patterns of when people read from left to right, how they stop and they focus on particular text. And so his work was very important because he showed that reading does not involve a smooth sweeping of the eyes along the text, but it assumes a series of short stops called fixations. And so you heard Dr. Behe talk about total time fixation or sight duration in which, you know, we focus in on a particular object. In the 1950s, Alfred Jarbus actually, he was a Russian scientist, and he was very instrumental into showing that the tasks that people are given in terms of, you know, what we're asking them to look at, whether it's plant material or whether it's the road, as you're looking at glaucoma patients and trying to figure out where they focus when they're driving, it has a very large influence on the subject's eye movement. And he also examined the relationship between fixations and interest, and that was very important. I'll talk about that a little bit in a second. In the 70s and 80s, eye tracking expanded with reading research and the strong eye-mind hypothesis. What you see here in this bottom part was actually neurobiologists from Johns Hopkins. They looked at the speed of movement of eyes, which is connected with the speed of decision-making and impatience. And prior to the 70s and 80s, when eye tracking was recorded or if it was looked at scientifically, it was just based on what people were looking at. It didn't bring together any other theories. It didn't examine why people were looking at a particular item. And that's very important because if you look at here where we're looking at the eyes or either the nose, just because we're looking at something doesn't correlate it to a particular process, right? So as we're looking at this particular picture, it just could be that we're recognizing the face. We may think that it looks like our cousin's face. We may think we like the face, we don't like the face. So you can't really tell what's going on just based on the fixation. And that's why some other items are very important, which I'll talk about. So as the internet became more prevalent in 1980s, 1990s. This gave birth to using eye tracking to answer questions related to human-computer interaction. And that had to do with how users search for commands in computer menus, disabled users and how they use computers. And all of this work here I talked about in the previous slide, Justin Carpenter, they tend to be sort of the grandfather of eye tracking when you start to look at connecting what people are looking at to actual hypotheses. And so in 1980, Justin Carpenter formulated the I-Mind hypothesis that stated there is no appreciable lag between what is fixated and what is processed. In other words, when a subject looks at a word or object, he or she is also thinking about it, and for exactly as long as the recorded fixation. So now you go back to Dr. Behe's study and then the other studies that you'll see in the rest of the workshop, and you'll notice why fixation time is so important, because it talks about how long people process information with respect to whatever the picture or subject that they're looking at. As we continue with the evolution of eye tracking and human-computer interaction has shown modest growth, and we talked about that being the rise of internet, studying computer interfaces as a means of interacting with the computer. Eye tracking is now used to look at questions such as usability, computer input devices, drop-down menus we talked about, attention on a website for advertising purposes. Some eye tracking is actually used for infants. I had a video, but it wouldn't show. I'll show you some videos in just a second. But there's research that is shown or that is done where if you say a particular word, they track to see whether the infant looks at that particular picture. So it's, you know, looking at cognitive processes. So there are lots of different things that people use. This is also used for geriatric research, infant research, adolescent research. So there's the possibilities are endless, although it is heavily used, as Dr. Behe talked about earlier, in a supermarket marketing product design concept. The interesting thing about eye tracking, and again, this goes back to fixations and how our mind thinks about what it is that we're looking at, we cannot infer specific cognitive processes directly from a fixation on a particular object in a scene, because I talked about earlier, it could be a source of liking or disliking or some type of concern. So eye tracking should be coupled with other methodologies, and what you'll hear today, we won't talk about verbal protocols, but you'll hear cue utilization as one of the items that were used, the theories that were used to bring some of our studies together. There are other theories that people use, special visualization for problem solving. The engineering discipline uses the visualization, the special visualization for problem solving a lot. So various applications of eye tracking research, it's been done in advertising, and what you see here, you know, are the little heat maps, and you know, where are people looking? And actually, there's a video, I know, I did that for a reason, I know it's a woman in a bikini, it's interesting to watch the difference between men and women, and very interesting when their spouses are around to see what it is that they're looking at, and there's eye tracking research, probably got some young man in trouble. Here, the driving, Chapman et al., 1998, again, it's been used in several contexts. If you think about the systems that are going on in the cars and how you have the blind spot detector and how you have auto assist even in parking, you know, some of this has to do with some eye tracking research, and here they're just looking at where people gaze, and they use that to help with, you know, assisted items in cars. So that's another example. Aviation is another, you know, just looking at how far pilots can see. So here you can see the eye tracking has been applied in large amounts of disciplines, medical research, laser refractive surgery. I'm very proud that, you know, before we couldn't say horticulture retail settings, but here back to driving, fatigue detection, virtual reality, adult, infant, adolescent, and geriatric research, sports training, commercial eye training, which is more of the computer usage that we talked about, improved image and video communications. So we talked about those fixations, and just going back a little bit to talk about what does it tell you. When we divide what we're looking at into fixations and saccades, when the eye pauses and when it moves to another position is what we're actually looking for. And the series and stops in the literature will be referred to as a scan path. And the average literature says that fixations last for approximately 200 milliseconds for when you're studying a linguistic type of study, and then about 350 milliseconds when you're viewing a scene. And this is useful for analyzing things such as cognitive intent, interest, and then salience, you know, point of interest, what people are looking at. So I'm going to give you two demos just to show. This one is very quick. And I don't think there is sound, but I don't think you'll see it. But basically what you're seeing, I know a little bit scary, is the eye, and then just being able to track again based on where the eye is moving, what they're looking at. And at times, you know, it could be not even what that point of interest is. So this is very interesting. And then you saw from Dr. Behe's study that then we use not only the points of where they move, where you can see they move from point one to point two to point three, and then it also shows or generates that heat map, right, that shows the area, kind of like a Doppler radar, right? I was just teaching my little girl that when you see red, that means heavy rain, right? It's going to be heavy rain and lightning. And it's the same thing here. You know, the deeper the color, the more intense they looked. Here's a Super Bowl ad.
I hate Mondays.
Yeah, they're the worst.
No worries, man. Everything will be all right.
Yeah, man.
Oh, don't fret me, brother. The sticky bun comes soon. Yeah. Wicked coffee, Mr. Jim. Julia, turn the frown the other way around.
Hey, Dad, you're from Minnesota, right?
Yes, I. The land of 10,000 lakes. The Gopher State.
So in conclusion, things are pretty dismal.
You know what this room needs? A smile. Who wanna come with I?
Traveling along, there's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy.
You guys are 3 minutes late.
Don't be no cloud on a sunny day.
Yeah, chill, Winston.
Sir?
Respect, bossman.
That's the power of German engineering.
Now, I'll admit that if we watched ads with bouncing balls, it would become pretty old pretty quickly. But in this case, if you could think about advertising and eye tracking, what you can see is, you know, where people are focusing, and if you had the heat map, you can tell how long they were focusing. But also, you could see if they were interested in the product or if they were off and doing other things, right? And especially in a Super Bowl ad where you're doing $80,000 per second, you know, it's pretty important in terms of what it is that they're doing and whether what they want you to look at is actually what's happening, right? So that's another example of how eye tracking research has helped people in the marketing field. My last slide, I'll just talk about with all of these studies, and I talked about in the beginning, Purdue University had this Discovery Learning Research Center, and we had the symposium where we talked about eye tracking research. And what I found was that across disciplines, there are a lot of difficulties in data interpretation. With this, if you think about in milliseconds how fast people look at different objects, you can have a plethora of data, right? And with that comes an extreme level of patience in terms of data mining. So what we find here is that relating fixation patterns to the task and relating it to cognitive activity has been a problem. You really have to be diligent in looking at a theory that will gel with what it is that you're doing. The interesting thing, though, is with eye tracking, you can do both a top-down approach where you start with theory, which obviously in some disciplines, that's where we start, or a bottom-up approach where you look at data observations and then you try to fit something on top of that. Both of those work. Just depends on who your journal review article people are and who your editor is, right, as to whether that is something that's appropriate. Researchers must choose some aspects of the data stream. That's very important. And the number of metrics, you know, you have to be diligent in thinking about what is the point of interest, what is it that you want them to do. And what you heard from Dr. Behe's first study was that, you know, we looked at price as well as the content on that sign, right? And so you have to really think through that process of what is it that you want them to look at. It doesn't matter what they look at, but are they looking at specifically what you're identifying as the point of interest? Lastly, researchers must choose eye tracking metrics that are relevant to the task and their cognitive ability. So those are the things that have been the most problematic in this research, but I think it has great potential. So I've heard the nod. Does anyone have any questions?
Time for one question. Hey, look,
thank you.
Hand.